The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 504, Cool Stuff Found, for Friday, May 30th, 2014. And welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in questions, tips, and cool stuff found. And today, we're sharing cool stuff found. In fact, let's start with one right here. Tom writes, the quickest way to get information into your phone via Siri is by saying, Siri, create a note that says, and then fill in whatever you want the note to say, and that's it. It just totally works. Awesome cool stuff found. Thank you, Tom. This episode is sponsored in part by Smile. Software with Smile at smilesoftware.com with PDF Pen for iPad. We'll talk about that a little bit more. This episode is sponsored by iFixit, the folks that bring you not only the repair manuals, but the tools that you will need to use them at iFixit.com. Here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
Here in Fairfield, Connecticut, where somebody keeps ringing my doorbell and I don't know who it is. And if I find you, this is John F. Braun.
How you doing today, John F. Braun?
Well, like I told you, my doorbell rang. There was no goodies on my deck. There was mail, but the mailman typically doesn't ring the bell. So,
and if he does, he rings twice.
The postman.
That's right.
Not the mail. The postman. Yeah. But not the mailman. I call him the mailman.
Okay. It's the same
carrier
guy.
It certainly could be. Yes.
Is there a difference between mail and post?
I think it's regional.
Right.
Sometimes he's a she.
Okay. Right. This is going nowhere.
I always wonder when the doorbell rings, I always wonder what it's all about. I mean, there are pamphlets left.
Yeah.
No promotional materials. I think I know what it was. It was something I mentioned earlier. And people don't care about that. What they do care about, because we got to get rolling, Dave. And once we get rolling, we're not going to stop.
All right, Leon, we have, so Cool Stuff Found is one of my favorite episodes because it's different, right? And it's fun stuff, and we get to talk about things like that. So it's fun. It's more fun when you folks send in all your stuff, and which you have. And so we're never going to make it through the list that we have. But it's the most fun when you folks send in stuff that you have created on your own, as is the case with not just one, but two things today. I think at least two things today. So first is Leon. He says, I have what I unabashedly consider cool stuff, but it's also shameless self-promotion. Over the past 6 months, I've created and then enhanced a tool that lets you capture all kinds of online activities, such as Facebook posts, tweets, Reddit saves, Pinterest pins, blog entries, Instagram photos, and plenty more. It can even capture your Fitbit stats. It takes all of this and loads it into the Day One journal program on your Mac. Day One also works and syncs with iOS. He said, the script is a bit of magic that I accomplished using AppleScript, Hazel, and If This Then That, IFTTT. He says, I think it's a testament to all the cool things that you can do on a Mac. Oh, and it's useful. And he has put it up at, so that the name of the thing, because it uses all of this stuff, and If This Then That is in the middle, it's called Giftedy. At giftedy.gadgetcoma.com. So that's giftedy.gadgetcoma.com. But we will put that in the show notes because that's how we roll here. So that's awesome. I love it. You created it yourself, and here we are. So that's cool stuff found number one. Cool stuff found number two from a listener is from Chris. He says, I, like many people, use the Spaces feature of OS X for keeping my desktops organized by task or to keep application windows from treading upon each other. One annoying thing about newer versions of OS X is the fact that if you already have multiple spaces open, changing the desktop background on one does not update the background on the others. Sure, it's not difficult to change each manually, but that seems like something that shouldn't have to be done. It's as if the Apple developers missed putting a simple checkbox in the dialog when setting your background to apply all or not. Of course, I can also understand some users wanting different backgrounds for different spaces as perhaps an indicator to which space you're on. Since there isn't already an easy way to do this, I put together an automator app called Desktopper that uses some Apple script to programmatically advance through the open spaces and set all of the desktop backgrounds to an image of the user's choosing. A caveat, this requires adding the app to the list of applications in System Preferences, Security and Privacy Accessibility, because it simulates key presses to advance through the open spaces. Funnily enough, if you don't want to use this app, you can simply close all of the open spaces except the first one, change the desktop background, and any new spaces will use the same background image. That seems inconvenient if you already have your windows arranged across several spaces. And that's from Chris. So thank you, Chris. We will again put a link to Desktopper, which he has hosted at SourceForge. And that's pretty awesome. So thank you so much, Chris. That's great stuff. I love it, John. Two cool things found from listeners. And there you go. It doesn't get any better than that. Does it?
It could.
It could.
To say. Well,
you know, John, let's take a minute. I want to thank the folks at smilesoftware.com. PDF Pen for iPad is the product that we get to feature this month. And I say this every time when we talk about Smile, because they make so many great things, and all of them are things that I use all the time. So it makes it really easy. But PDF Pen for iPad, so we have lots of great sponsors here, right? What's great is when we have two great sponsors that taste great together. And that's the case with PDF Pen for iPad, because PDF Pen for iPad now has transporter integration, which lets you access your PDFs on your own private secure cloud if you're a transporter customer. So they've been doing this with Dropbox for a long time, which is great, and iCloud, which is great, but those are public clouds is the wrong term, but they are publicly hosted clouds, right? They're not hosted at your house. Transporter is your own private cloud, and now PDF Pen for iPad has direct integration with Transporter, which is awesome. And you know, all the same functionality, right? You can sign a contract, you can fix typos, you can correct a price list, anything you need to do. I mean, you can literally edit the contents of a PDF right on your iPad inside PDF Pen for iPad. If that's not cool, I don't know what is. But as I said, you know, I've used it all the time to sign contracts, and I always make sure it's on my iPad and on my iPhone. And I've done both in both places. Of course, you can use iCloud or Dropbox, as I mentioned. Also, links up with Evernote, Google Drive, Box. So all kinds of great stuff. And so there it is. It just doesn't get any better than that. And that's the thing we love about our sponsors, especially the folks there at Smile. They're constantly innovating, constantly adding new stuff. And you can go get that on the App Store, obviously, because that's how you get apps for your iPad. And you can get PDF Pen for your iPhone there, and PDF Pen for Mac. You can get either on the App Store or direct from smilesoftware.com. Go check it out at smilesoftware.com. You can get a free trial from them right there. So again, thank them when you do, because they really do help us here. So smilesoftware.com now with Transporter support. All right, John, what do you got?
I want to toss in one thing here, Dave.
Yeah, go.
Because we mentioned Transporter. I just want to gloss over this quickly because it's something I just did, Dave. So the Transporter, you know, we both have one, and they have this special folders feature.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of hesitant to enable it on multiple machines, but I finally did it because I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I thought it would somehow mush everything together. Fortunately, it does not. So that makes me kind of happy. To have an additional level of backup, because I have separate document folders on two different machines, and it did it as I would expect.
Cool.
I don't know how much you've worked with that feature.
No, like you, I've been a little bit hesitant to, you know, I don't have a need to sync all that stuff. So it's been a little bit like, well, maybe, you know, not so much.
Yeah, so basically within the documents folder, once you enable it on multiple machines, it basically creates a subfolder with the name of the machine in question and isolates it that way. So,
because
I wasn't quite sure. Again, I thought it was going to mush all my documents folders from all machines together and it just would have been chaos, but it's not. No, it handles it very, very well.
Okay.
So I'm glad because I have parts of those folders backed up with other services like Bitkasa. I told you I'm using that. So, but, you know, as I actually recently had one of the people that I tweet with often say, oh my gosh, I just lost some important email and I don't have a backup. And I think I'm going to shake my fist at her.
Okay.
Bonnie. I'm like, you listen to us and you don't have a backup.
Yeah.
Shame on you. Shame on you.
It's all right, true.
Go.
All right. So I found, via a blog post from Dr. Drang, I found a very cool terminal utility called SIPS, S-I-P-S. And what it is it is a batch image processing utility. He wrote this and said he had a folder full of a few hundred photographs that he wanted to share with a client. Sending him a Dropbox link was the obvious solution, but uploading that many photos, you know, would take too long. And the client didn't want all the full res stuff, just wanted smaller versions. So with SIPS from the terminal, he was able to do this. He just navigated to the folder, typed SIPS, S-I-P-S space dash Z space 1024, because he wanted 1024 pixels in either in the longest direction. So either width or height, whatever the maximum is. And then you put in the file name, or if you want all the files in a folder, you just put star and that's it. So literally, you know, 20 characters or less typed into the terminal, and SIPS went and created copies of all these things. So I will put that link to that blog post in there because that's cool. We love things like that. What do you got, John?
That is neat. Okay, so it's very focused because I've used something called Image Magic, but that's like the kitchen sink of image processing utilities from the command line.
Yeah.
It'll be resizing, but it'll do everything else.
Right, but I don't think Image Magic is a part of an OS X default install, whereas SIPS is.
You know? I'll let you check that out.
I did.
You're handing the baton to, you can get it with a package manager. Mm-hmm. Package manager.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm going to tell you about something, Dave, that I found this out when I was exploring when we were having our whole thing about monitoring wireless traffic.
Yeah.
It's like, boy, you know, that'd be maybe it's Wireshark that's the problem here.
Okay.
I'm like, geez, let me see if there
we have since found out that it's not Wireshark that was the problem. But as we talked about in the last show, just in case people are, you know,
right,
confused. Yeah. So
the issue was I was almost certain that I had seen wireless traffic from other devices using Wireshark on my Mac.
And I'm sure you were sure that you had when you were using
and
a different router.
And I verified.
That's right.
It.
Yep.
And I verified on a different one at our library.
That's right.
So, but I wanted to see if there were other programs that could do packet monitoring. Now, Wireshark is swell. There's one little issue that I'll have with Wireshark is that Wireshark is a X11 based application and that you need an X11 layer, which at this point right now does not come packaged with most versions of Mac OS X.
Okay.
It's an optional install. It'll come up. So if you run Wireshark, it'll be like, you know, I need an X11 layer. There's this thing called XQuartz. You want to download that and run it? And it's like, yeah, sure. So it's kind of hokey. But I found something that's native, Dave. And I think it's based on a lot of the same technology, but it's something called Packet Peeper at packetpeeper.org. And from what I can tell, Dave, it has, it looks to me to be as, not more, but I think at least as capable as Wireshark for being a packet sniffer in that it can capture packets, it can reassemble them, you can write filters. There are plugins for it. It can output the packet captures in the PCAP TCP dump format, which Wireshark does as well. So it just warmed my heart because I think the only thing I had to do extra is that when I wanted to see the source and destination IP addresses, I actually had to enable that. That was not part of at least my default installation, because that was what I was looking for. I was looking for, all right, what's the source and destination IP? Are they anything except me? Whereas that's the default when I use Wireshark. So, it's a native Mac app. It's free. You can even get the source. Check it out.
Sweet.
It's awesome.
That's awesome.
I had never heard about it before. So, yeah.
Sweet. All right. We will put that link in the show notes. Cool. More stuff. Heath writes, I've recently started making use of the spaces feature on my computer. Yet another one. And was going to write in a question about how to automatically time how long I spend in different spaces. But I imagine Dave saying, there's probably a way to trigger an Apple script to do this when you change spaces or something. After spending some time on Google, I figured out that there's a way to do this. So I'm writing in a solution instead of a problem. I found a fantastic menu bar task timer called TikTok with Apple Script support and an app called Event Scripts, which can trigger an Apple Script in response to a spaces change. All I had to do was write a 3-line Apple Script and I was off to the races. Thought I'd share in case anyone else is interested in doing this, and also wasn't sure if you guys had mentioned TikTok or Event Scripts. And his Apple Script is just tell application TikTok toggle task being unproductive, which is something that he would then, you know, cause his timer to go. And that's it. So we will put links for TikTok and Event Scripts in the show notes. And thank you so much, Heath. That's I'm happy that I was able to help by being that voice in your ear. And so there you go. What do you got, John?
And if I'm reading the agenda correctly, Dave, you're handing this to me.
Yes, sir.
Outstanding. So you and I love utilities like iStat menus that tell us what's going on with the system. And we got a note here from Eddie saying, hey, there's something else out there that I thought I'd tell you guys out about, that I would tell you about. And it's called HW monitors. And basically, I don't think it does everything that some of the other packages does, but it basically is a package that will a software bundle that includes drivers, applications that allow you to access information from hardware sensors on the Mac.
Cool. It's interesting. He calls it HW monitors, but the link, as I was going to put it in the show notes, is HW sensors.
Sensors. Oh, no, you're right. Okay.
But yes. You're right. He calls it HW monitors. So I'm not sure if we're missing something, but I don't think I don't think we are. I think that's it. So.
Yeah. So it looks very similar. And actually, yeah. I think it's a similar package, but.
Yeah.
Check it.
Yeah. And it's free, right? Which is cool. So
yeah, we're not going to update everybody's wallet here.
No,
not all at once.
That's right. That's right. In fact, I think most of the things that we have mentioned as cool stuff found so far are free, right? We haven't mentioned a single thing that is not. So put that in your hopper and smoke it for free.
Hopper.
I don't know. That's a phrase.
I don't think I have a hopper.
I know. I don't keep one. I lease with an option to buy. Okay. Greg writes, he said, I just got a service called Threema, Threema, a secure messaging app for the iPhone. It uses end-to-end encryption so that only the recipient that I've chosen and not even the servers in between can read my messages. It can send text, pictures, videos, and even lets me share my location in a very secure way. It also syncs with your address book, if you let it, to find other Threema users automatically. And of course, the messages are free. And it's at threema.ch. So we will put a link to that in the show notes. And he says, get it so that we can secure our messages from the government. And so that's cool. So we will put that in the show notes because that's how we roll. But it's worth pointing out that if you are running iOS 7, I believe it's iOS 7. Yeah, it has to be. And or Mavericks on your Mac, you can do a similar thing. iMessage is secure end to end. And we mentioned this in a previous show, but it's worth mentioning it again. The way it works is each of your devices, your Mac, your iPhone, your iPad, generates a public and private key pair, and it keeps the private key on the device, sends the public key up to Apple servers. So John, when you go to send me an iMessage, you actually download all of my public keys from Apple servers, the one for each of my computers or devices. You then encrypt the message using my public key. It gets sent through Apple servers. And then when I retrieve it, my devices each individually use that public key to decrypt it. I mean, it actually uses a symmetric key that you generate and then throw away and all of that normal stuff that happens with public key encryption. But that's how it works. So iMessage does that too. I would encourage all of you to go to Google and Facebook and even Twitter with direct messages and ask them how they're doing encryption, end-to-end encryption of all their messages. Because my guess is the answer will sound something like this. There it was. Did you hear that, John? Nothing.
I heard a deafening silence.
Yes, that's right. All right, John. Now that we're there, let's spend some money. What do you got for us?
So my pals at Square Jellyfish, this was very timely because we were talking about remote shutters a while ago.
We were.
And I got a note from them saying, hey, we got something new, John. You want to check them out? And so I got a couple of goodies in the mail. And I think they rang the doorbell before they delivered them. Jelly, which makes all sorts of cool little products here, recently released. The one that I received here and tried out and I really like is called the Jelly remote on their webpage. And I think it's also called the Jelly 4 button remote.
Do you mean Square Jellyfish? Is that who you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Squarejellyfish.com for anybody looking.
So. I'm sorry. I thought that's what I said.
You said Jelly. You just called the company Jelly.
Oh, yeah. Square. All right. Maybe I dropped out. So squarejellyfish.com makes all sorts of great stuff. And the Jelly remote that I have has 4 buttons on it. Now, the one that's most relevant, I think, is the one where when we were talking about remote shutter, it has a button where once you pair it with your iDevice, or actually it doesn't even have to be an iDevice, I think. Well, depending on what you want to do. I tested it with my iPhone and iPad, but one of the buttons is when you're in the camera app and you've paired it and you press the take a photo button. Well, guess what? It takes a photo and it's very small, very handheld. Put it on keychain or something like that. But then it also has 3 other buttons. It has one that will, or I guess the other 3 are meant to control music applications in that it will go to the next song, go to the previous song, decrease volume, increase volume, play or pause.
That's pretty cool.
So they sent me that, and I think it's really neat. The retail on it is, I think, $40, but you can get it typically for less depending on where you shop, and there's a lot of links on their site. There's a second product that they have, which I think is a different market here. It's the same pricing, but it only does a couple of things. It has 2 buttons, one for taking photos and one for turning the flashlight on and off. Okay. So they came out with 2 models there.
Cool.
Different costs. And then the third thing that they sent me, which I thought I'd mention this because I think it's also neat as well. They're like, well, you know, if we're going to send you this to experiment with your camera, with your iDevice, why don't we give you a cool tripod? So they gave us a whole bunch in the goodie bag back at Macworld.
Right.
But this is a different one. Mm. So this is the one that they call their Spring Tripod mount, and it has 3 parts in it. So one is a spring loaded grabber, if you will, that can grab not only an iPhone but also ridiculously huge devices like some of the Galaxy phones. So that's kind of neat. So it's very flexible. Then they have the mount part and then a part that goes in between, so it's a very flexible. Yeah, so if you don't have somebody to hold the camera for you, this is a very good mount, and it works with multiple devices, and it will sit on different surfaces. And we'll link to that one as well. So those were, I've received 2 of them. The third one is, the remote that I don't have, but this is a good solution for people, like I mentioned in a prior episode.
Yeah.
You may not want to lug around, even though the keyboard that I was using, is not a huge keyboard. A Bluetooth keyboard to just take pictures is probably not the best solution where this is what it's meant to do.
Very cool. All right. Well, we have another one. Listener John. So John, you found a few of these things. And listener John writes in and says, I heard you speak of using a Bluetooth keyboard to take photos when not holding the iPhone. I use AirTurns Digit 2. I have it paired with my iPhone 5S, my iPad Air, and my Retina MacBook Pro, and my work Dell Win 7 PC. I use it to trip the shutter on the iPhone, advance slides when giving presentations on one of the work laptops, or on one of either of the laptops, or acting as a remote for the iPad. While on a recent vacation, I put the iPhone on a square jellyfish micro tripod, as you just mentioned, John, and was able to extend my arm for group selfies. I held the Digit 2 in my other hand, which was typically around someone else's back, to snap the picture. Much easier than trying to tap the shutter button on the iPhone or hauling around a Bluetooth keyboard for photography. So we will definitely put a link to this in the show notes as well. It's yet another four button. Actually, it's a five button remote. But there you go. So I love it. All this great stuff. I had seen the Digit 2 from AirTurn at little trade show we went to, Macworld iWorld, I guess is the appropriate name. And it's cool. What's that? What did I say?
You said a little show.
Yeah, I was being.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Here it is, the Digit 2.
Well, you are going to a little show shortly, right? That WWDC one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, fly out on Sunday for that. I guess technically that is a smaller show, much smaller than Macworld. There's only
I think the attendance would be on the order of thousands, where I would estimate Macworld is on the order of tens of thousands.
That's right. Yeah, WWDC, they cap it right around 5,000 people, but it's not a trade show, it's a conference, right? So 5,000 people for a conference is huge, massive. Macworld is, I don't know how many people attend the conference sessions versus the rest, but my guess is it's a lot less than 5,000 people. The people come and attend the trade show, walk around there. But as far as the conference sessions, it's nowhere near. I don't think it's anywhere near 5,000. So,
yeah. And I believe we're going to cover that's Monday, right?
That's Monday. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure most major outlets will be covering the keynote.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
They're streaming it, right?
They are. Yeah. So if you are in such a position where you can sit and watch it live, you can do that. So, all right. Now let's move on here. You know what? I'm going to take another pause here because I saw the pop happen on you, John, and we're going to try and fix this. All right. So we might have John's popping sorted out. We'll see if it happens again. But we found an interesting thing. I changed the way John's audio is routed and wanted to make sure we were in sync with each other. Because there is some natural delay that's introduced by Skype, and then some more natural delay introduced by the way I have John's audio routed. Any digital audio routing is of course going to, cause some delay. So I wanted to make sure I didn't introduce any significant delay that we couldn't deal with. And so I had John, I had you read, had you count along with your clock and
on the Mac mini,
right? And I realized you were 5 seconds out of sync, and there was no way we were 5 seconds out of sync. We would have known, right? We would have noticed it in the, 10 seconds we were conversing. So you realized that you have some, something going on over there.
Let me double check here. Well, no. And then, I don't want to, I'm just going to spit it out. Then I looked at my MacBook Pro. So for whatever reason, my mini is off by 5 seconds. Now I think it may not have done a NTP adjust. And what is that all about? Everybody's going to ask. Well, you can have your Mac synchronized to a time server. Now it doesn't always do this. And the thing is, sometimes NTP, which is Network Time Protocol or whatever program does this, will make intelligent adjustments if it notices that the clock of the device that it's on is continuously lagging or all that. It should nudge it in the right direction,
right?
5 seconds isn't the end of the world for a lot of things. For audio, yes, it is.
Well, for this type of audio, it is. Yeah.
Right. But I'm curious why because it's still three. No, my two machines are still 6 seconds off.
Did you turn off NTP on your Mac mini and turn it back on?
Not, I'm going to see if it's even engaged. I mean, I assume it is. So,
yeah, so
where would you engage that, you ask?
System preferences, date and time.
I gotta find this. There we go. Date and time.
Yep.
Set date and time automatically. AppleAmericas/US time.apple.com.
Yep.
Now the thing is, last I checked, my MacBook Pro, I am not syncing to Apple server. I am syncing to a military server.
Yeah, but I mean, but you're
it's either tick or
they're top, not going to be so 5 seconds off from each other, John. It doesn't matter. So well,
how do you know?
Because you and I were in sync, and I'm syncing to time.apple.com, and you're syncing to the machine that actually was right was the one that's right, syncing
I'm,
to
Togg. I'm just making an observation. My MacBook Pro is synced to tick.usno.navy.mil.
My guess is if you
is wrong is not.
If so you I'm going to mute you. I'm going to mute you for a second because the ticking's still happening. But while I've got you muted here, John, just uncheck the checkbox there. You are back on, by the way, and recheck the checkbox in your date and time and see if the clock jumps back by 5 seconds. My guess is it will. Are you there, John? Or did I mute you forever? Okay, good.
Yeah, they're back in sync.
Haha. Yeah, so that I have seen that before where NTP will stop updating.
All right. Hey, that's a good tip. So whatever reason, it either didn't self-adjust or it just hadn't talked to it for a while.
That's right.
Great.
Yep. All right. I want to talk about our second sponsor, John, which is iFixit. And of course, they are at iFixit.com. The folks at iFixit, I said it in the beginning of the show, I'll say it again. They make great, freely available manuals. Now you're popping on your mic or something. I hear you doing that, right? You making noise over there, John? You're doing something.
That was a large vehicle on the street.
Oh, interesting. So the noise gate's a little, maybe that's all it is. Anyway. All right. So iFixit makes all these teardown manuals, right? To show you how to take things apart, because it's crazy thinking about taking apart a laptop. Right. It's there's all kinds of crazy things that you've got to know how to do, which screws to unscrew, which screws not to unscrew, you know, what to do with this piece, what to expect when you pull up, you know, the lid of the laptop, you know, be careful because there's a connector under there that you wouldn't know if it was your first time or even your second time. And you might not realize or you might forget if you're not doing this all the time. These guys have made it so that taking apart a Mac or, you know, anything that's not a tower, that's just not painfully obvious how to get into, they've made it so that it's doable. They don't necessarily make it any easier, but they do make it as easy as that machine possibly could be, because they figure out all the different ways in and then find the best way and show it to you. So that's what they do. Then the way they make their money, and this is great because they also do a great job at this too, is they have all kinds of accessories, tools, all sorts of things that you can, that you'll need to get inside your Mac. And, you know, yeah, you might have a Phillips screwdriver at home and a flathead screwdriver, but if you don't have exactly the right Phillips screwdriver for these tiny little screws, and they are all different sizes, you're going to wind up stripping those screw heads. It's just how it works. So getting the right size screw and having instructions that tell you exactly which screwdriver to use on which screw is invaluable. In addition to that, you know, all those crazy Torx screws, you really can't use the wrong size there because of the way the Torx shape is. And then if you're doing an iPhone, you need to do the pentalobe screws. You need a special screwdriver for that. And they make toolkits that have all of this stuff in them over there at iFixit. They've got a killer ProTek toolkit. It's $65. And it's got 70 tools in it to assist you with any mod, malfunction, or misfortune that comes your way. It includes their 54-bit driver kit, which is what I was mentioning before. It's got a great driver handle, a screwdriver handle, and then you put in whatever head you want to put in, and it could be, you know, a Phillips 1, a Phillips 0, a Phillips 3, maybe a flathead or a Torx or a pentalobe, whatever you need to do. And the Torx are all secure Torx, so they've got the right security bits. They've got the tri-wing bit for video game consoles. And it's even got the triangle bit for McDonald's toys, because why not? Right. You want to have everything. You have everything. Comes with a spudger, which is the thing that you know, sometimes you're inside a computer and there's a little connector on the motherboard that you need to kind of pick off. And the first thing that you think of is, oh, I'll just grab a flathead screwdriver and get it in there and twist it. Well, you can do that. But of course, the edge of the flathead screwdriver that's against the motherboard is going to scratch things off and probably, you know, ruin some solder connection. And then that's the end of it. The spudger is a piece of plastic built to do exactly that without ruining the motherboard. And you can just get it in there and twist it a little bit and pop it without ruining anything. So check this thing out. It's really, really cool. And here's the deal. If you use coupon code MGG, you get $10 off your order if you spend $50 or more. So if you're going to get this toolkit, boom, you're saving $10 right out of the gate. And so visit ifixit.com/MGG and then use MGG as the coupon code and you'll be in good shape. So that's that. What, John?
I was almost scared when I got this kit, Dave. You and I both got this kit. I think it also has a wrist strap. But the other thing is, looking at some of the tools in there, I almost felt like I could be do surgery with it. I mean, it's the most comprehensive kit that I've seen.
It is. It definitely
I'm very pleased.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. So check them out. ifixit.com/MGG. And of course, coupon code MGG saves you $10. And that coupon code is good for, I think, another month or so, but just order quickly so that you don't miss out, because we don't want you to miss out. All right. More cool stuff. John, you know that I am a big fan of putting a glass shield on your iPhone.
Why would you do that? There's already a glass shield.
Yeah, I know, but here's the deal. If I break the one that's on there, it's like $150 repair minimum to get that digitizer replaced, right? If I put another one on it, I don't notice it because they're real thin and they feel great and all that good stuff. I hate the plastic shields. I mean, they're great because they keep your screen protected, but you know, they don't look good. They don't feel good. They make the stuff on the screen not look that great, but the glass protectors are awesome. I've had the opportunity to check out two new ones. Monoprice, believe it or not, $15. They sell a glass protector for John, and it works great. I don't have the Monoprice one on my phone. I put it on my daughter's phone because she's the one that breaks these things all the time. not only is the Monoprice one, does it work well, but it hasn't broken yet. And it's actually probably the one she's had on there the longest. So, that's $14.86, I think is the price. We'll put a link in the show notes, and you can actually get them cheaper than that if you wind up buying more. But, and so I've checked out the one from Monoprice that works great. And also the, Bodyguard Screen Guards Pure. I think they put one of those in our speaker bag this year.
Oh, yes.
And I tried, I've got that on one of the phones here at the house, and I don't break the glass that's on mine. So I still have the red one that I've had on for, you know, since I got my phone, but everybody else in the house seems to break them. So,
really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll have to look in the bag. Yeah. Cause I'm not a klutz like your daughter, you know, the rest of the family there.
That's
like,
right.
I have never, believe it, not going, you know, it's going to happen now.
Of course.
I think I've dropped onto a hard surface my iPhone once.
Okay.
But I've never broken a screen. Again, knock on wood. It's going to happen.
Right.
Like my phone is right in front of me. I think it's going to spontaneously, the screen is just going to implode or something. So.
Well, I put them on. They feel good. I know it's protected against, you know, whatever I've got in my pocket or wherever I put my phone. I just don't have to worry about my phone with these things on. And the Bodyguards ones, I think the one they gave us was for the phone, but the product line is called Screen Guards Pure, and it's, you know, tempered glass that you put on. But they've got them not just for the iPhone, but for other products as well, including all your Galaxy phones, but also your iPad Air, your iPad Mini, your iPad. In fact, every iPad they've got them for, with the exception of the original one. Doesn't seem like they have one sized exactly for that. But I got to tell you, these things, the Bodyguards ones are good too. I've had some problems. The Radio Shack ones specifically were crap. They, I mean, they worked in that they protected the phone, but they always left a big bubble in the middle of the screen. And if you get a bubble with this thing, that always forms, that it's just the way it is, because there's no glue in the middle. It's like glued around the edges, and that's how they're supposed to be. But if the glass isn't made properly, you'll get that glue there. So, or that bubble there, but these don't show bubbles, and they're super easy to put on, way easier than the plastic ones. I mean, you just clean the screen, cause you don't want dust or anything in there. Then you peel off the backing and you slap it on there, and then you're done. It takes that long. It takes you way longer to clean the screen of your phone before putting it on than it does to put the thing on. So there you go. Lots of those things. I know we told you we'd make you spend some money, but this is good money to spend. So that's why we talk about it. I don't know. What else? What do you got, John?
Me?
Yeah.
So I was going through all the goodies that I have scattered about my house.
Sure.
And I found one, Dave, and I thought, wait, you know what? Now that I have an iPhone with Bluetooth low power, which I could not do on my iPhone 4, I'm like, let me break this out and check it out and see what it's like. And it's called, so the name of the company is Phone-Halo, or you can find them at phone-halo.com. And the specific product that they gave me, I think it was at the Engadget event, is called the Wallet Tracker. Wallet as in wallet, and tracker, T-R-A-C-K-R. What is this? Well, it's a Bluetooth device. And the intent is, it's to help you, though you can use it for other things, but I think the original intent was, well, this will help you figure out if you've either lost your wallet or somebody is running away with your wallet.
Fascinating.
How can you do that? You think, you know, I mean, a Bluetooth device, I mean, it's got to be a piece of hardware. It's got to have an antenna. It's got to have power and stuff like that. It's got to be, you know, huge. Well, no, it's not. You look at this thing, Dave. It's 4 centimeters by 6 centimeters, so rectangular, but it's 0.4 centimeters thick.
Oh.
It's designed to be put into a wallet.
Huh.
So you get this device, which is a Bluetooth device, and then you get their application, and the key, I guess, is their application. So when you run the application, it will, within the range of Bluetooth, which, you know, can vary to tens, you know, in this case, I would say tens of feet.
Oh, is that all? They're not using the Bluetooth that'll go 300 feet or whatever for this?
Their claim on their site, I think, is that because of the small size of this, I think their claim is you're talking tens of feet.
But, okay.
But for its purpose, I think it's cool.
Yeah.
Or I think it's acceptable. Bluetooth can, in theory, I think, go up to, and actually I've tested this, Bluetooth in theory, or Bluetooth low energy, Bluetooth LE, can go, I think, a couple hundred feet.
Right.
Maybe 300 maximum.
Yeah, right.
But for the purpose of this, and then you run the application. So the application does a couple of things. So one, the application has a separation alert. So if your phone and this device get too far away from each other, you're going to know about it.
Oh.
And your phone's going to tell you about it. So this is a brilliant concept behind the wallet thing. So if it ever sees the device, which one would hope you keep in your wallet, it's going to say, dude, somebody's running. Either you're wandering away from your wallet, which is probably bad, or somebody took your wallet and that's bad too. And then, but then it also, with their application, of course, tied to the GPS on your iDevice, it will show you the other feature it has is it'll show you the last location that it's seen the device. So actually what I've done as of late, just for fun, is put it in my car. And it'll show me the last location that it's seen my car. So this could also be a great solution for, as long as you run the app. So it doesn't, as far as I can see, run it in the background. But if you leave their app running, and I haven't run the battery down, so you would think, oh, you know, it's going to drain my battery. Well, number one, it's low energy Bluetooth. And number two, the device takes your standard batteries, and I haven't seen the batteries go down from 100% at all. It shows the battery status. And you can also send an alarm. So if you want to tell the device, okay, blink a light and make a sound, it'll do that as well. Dude, I think it's just a totally cool combination of features using Bluetooth.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, I like it. I like that they made it so thin. That's That's good.
Yeah, they have a couple of other versions. Yeah, this one, again, is for wallets. They have two others, but the pricing is also, you know, so a single device is $30. Two of them is $40. Four of them is $80. And the batteries will last the standard, you know, CR 2016 batteries last for a couple of years. So very cool application of Bluetooth and iDevice. And I think it also works with other platforms as well.
That's cool stuff found. I like it. I like cool stuff that's refound too. And with what you're talking about, you're actually using cool stuff found to find stuff that's important because that's your wallet. Yeah. But Brian writes in and, you know, we'd talked about this utility called Yasu, yet another system utility that was one of the first GUI utilities that you could use to fix your home directory's user permissions. You know, Apple's disk utility, when you run that to fix permissions, it fixes system permissions, but it does not touch your user folder or anything in there. You used to be able to do it and you still can if you boot in single user mode or in recovery mode and you can muck around that way. But Yasu was one of the first utilities that did that. It also does a lot of other things. It'll run your maintenance scripts. It's a really simple one screen, one window interface. You check all the things you want it to do. You say go and then it does it. So it's super simple. But we were sad when Mavericks came out and he wasn't able to spend the time to get it working. Jim Mitchell is the programmer on that one. Well, good news. Jim was able to get Yasu working under Mavericks and I've run it and it's awesome. So so we will put that in the show notes because we love Yasu. I think it's yasuapp.net. Because yasuapp.com is coming soon. It says in 287 days, something's happening at yasuapp.com. Well, I'll tell you what, in the meantime, check out yasuapp.net to get something that actually works for you today. And I think that'll help. That'll work. I love it. I actually, for that type of maintenance, I like Yasu way better than, what's the other one? Onyx. Just because the interface Onyx does cool stuff and it does some things that Yasu can't do, so it has its place. But man, you know, you launch it and it's like trying to run a disk scan, which you can turn off, but you know, then it's immediately asking you for your password as opposed to waiting until you run a script that needs it. Yasu, you just launch it feels much more lightweight, at least in terms of user interaction and speed of launch and all that good stuff. So Yasu for OS X Mavericks, it's a reality. More cool stuff found, John. You know, I'm a musician, right? I've mentioned that a couple times.
Well, you're a drummer.
That's awesome. Yeah. You know, did you see the article?
As a woodwind player, which I would consider a saxophone woodwind.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
No, good natured ribbing because some people question whether drummers are musicians. I think you are.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that there's some science that shows that drummers are actually smarter than the average human and certainly smarter than the average musician. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes for you. And actually, now, drummers, I will offer, I will say you're welcome, because when this article goes on to point out that when you play music with a drummer or someone keeping rhythm, it actually makes you smarter too. So there you go. That's how that works.
Now, do you listen to NPR at all?
Sometimes. Yeah, sure.
Because they had a piece today that was actually talking about rhythms and how it was actually very interesting. Yeah, well, I'll see if I can get a link. But it was talking about how do you get a song that gets people to jump on the dance floor? And they were like, it's a combination of a simple rhythm.
Sure.
And a somewhat complex rhythm. But I guess the whole thing behind it was you need a rhythm mostly driven by the drummer that invites people to fill in the blanks, I think. And that, so if you have just basic, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, that's boring. And if it's too complex, then people get confused. But if you get this happy medium, and I'm sure you know this as a drummer.
Yeah. Well, no, it's why funk works. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's how you get the people pouring on the dance floor is you got to find this. So yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Or you just have your guitar player start playing the beginning of Sweet Home Alabama. I don't know what it is about that song, but man, all that needs to happen is like the first three notes out of that guitar and the dance floor is immediately the most crowded place in the entire room. But I digress because Frank,
please regress.
I will regress. We will retrogress soon, but hang on to your hats for that one. Cause I don't think any of us are ready for that. Frank writes, as a fellow musician, I found this app recently that I really like called Musician's Toolkit or Musician's Kit. He says, and it does all kinds of different things. It all in one. It's a tuner. It's a metronome. It's a recorder. Does all kinds of things. It's available for free. You can get it in iTunes. And so we will put a link to that in the show notes because that's how we roll. So, Musician's Kit is what that's called. So that's in there free. Ben brings us back to cool things that Siri does. John, he says, if you're using Siri with maps, and it gives you directions, it will give you two tones, one in the right speaker. And then your left is to turn left and one in the left speaker. And then in the right to turn right, is how that works. So it's trying to give you, you know, spatial cues that the two tones are going to turn you one way or the other. You're still popping like crazy over there, John. I have to think it's coming from your end at this point because I'm not. It's coming straight through Skype. I can see it happening in Skype. But
I'm doing absolutely nothing.
I know. And that yet there were like three more of them. I'm
just sitting here listening to your dulcet tones.
I know. I know.
Maybe I have a bad connection. We'll have to debug this.
We've reconnected you like three times. I don't think it's the connection. I don't know what it is. Oh,
maybe it could be an analog. Could it be an analog thing? I don't know.
Oh, you Someone know, it said it totally could cable. Be.
I don't know. I mean, I.
Yeah.
I mean, I recently admit. I don't think that. I told you recently. You know, I just for out of curiosity, I took my PR40 apart. I don't think I damaged it.
Oh,
no, that's not it. No, I've.
How far apart did you take it?
I took the whole thing out of the enclosure, and I'm like, yeah, that's kind of cool, and I put it back in. No, but I did disconnect and reconnect the maybe my XLR cable is a shot.
You know what? I'm going to mute you for a second while I start talking about the next thing. Go ahead and disconnect your mic cable from both ends, and then reconnect it, and ping me in Skype when you're finished with that, and then maybe that will do it. But that's cool about the cues that Siri does, right? It, you know, kind of giving you an idea. The sound came from the right, goes to the left. You're turning left. Sound came from the left, goes to the right. You're turning right. This stuff does sink in. We had a car with GPS and it gave a slightly different pitch tone when you had to turn left versus right. And I didn't realize it for years, but you know, you get Pavlovian about it and it's a good thing. It definitely kind of triggers you in the right place. So we like that. It's good. It's good. All right. I haven't seen. Oh, there's John. All right. Well, let's hope this is better now. But I'm going to talk about Jason. Actually, I'm going to talk about what Jason told us about, which is a service called Plain Cloud at cookingrobot.de. Plain Cloud allows you to access all your iCloud files inside the Finder. It just makes it easy to get to all the stuff in the Finder. So I will put that link out there and there you go. So Plain Cloud, John, it's good stuff.
Really, Dave?
Yeah.
Am I clicking and popping and tapping? And
I think I heard another pop from you. I wonder if it's something about your mic. Yeah, there it was again. I mean, it's not sounding like a digital thing. At first, I just assumed it was because we have those kinds of little digital things. But this is very new for you. So something's not right.
Yeah, but I did this before our last episode. And there were who knows?
Hmm. Huh. Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, we also noticed that your gain was totally cranked on your mic. In your Mac. I mean, I know we've brought it down, but something's not right, but it sounds analog-ish. I don't know.
Could be. Yeah. We will figure it out because
it does sound like a short. I agree.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, do mics wear out? I wasn't stabbing the mic. I mean, when I told you I opened it up, I was just like, oh, you know, I wonder what's going on. Actually, I was looking to see if there was any, kind of foreign objects here on the screen. And I was like, oh, there's not. And I put it back in. But, you know, I wasn't pulling on wires or nothing. But
Right.
And even now, I mean, if anything, I mean, we're in the, the weather is kind of weird here. I mean, if anything, I would expect dry weather, you know, if wires are going to, you know, decompose and all that. But I mean, looking in this mic, Dave, I mean, the PR40 is a pretty basic, there's not a lot going on in there.
Right.
I mean, it's XLR, it's wires, it's a, you know, element that's capturing it. That's really about it, right?
That's it. It's a microphone.
It could be, you know, I've installed a couple of QuickTime things on this machine lately, and maybe I should pull them off. That could be interfering. Who knows?
Huh. Yeah. When was the last time that machine was rebooted?
That's another thing. How do we tell that, Dave? You should know this. Come on.
Yeah, go to iStat menus and drop it down and look at the bottom. It'll tell you what your uptime is. That's the easiest way if you have that installed. Which,
17 days?
Okay. It could be a RAM fighting thing, too. Because Skype is susceptible to that. So make sure you reboot. I always reboot this machine day of podcast. And when I don't, I get weird stuff. So I bet maybe that's it. Maybe that's all it is.
But thank you to our chat room. Have we mentioned our chat room, Dave?
MattGeekGub.com/stream.
Yeah. So two things. So number one, Furby's in our chat room says uptime in the terminal will tell you if you don't have iStat menus, how long you've been up. And let's see, uptime. Yep. 17 days. So,
also on that machine, do you have anything running in the background that doesn't need to be, like email?
Let's see the apps that I'm running right now. I am running Colloquy. I'm running Terminal. I'm running Piezo.
Yeah.
I'm running, Skype.
Yeah.
I'm running TextEdit, Safari, Preview, Finder, and Hardware Growler, and that's usually what I run when I'm doing the podcast.
So. All right. Well, we'll plow through. Charge Key is a cool thing. Have you guys seen this? It's at hellonomad.com. It's a one piece rubber cable that it has USB on one end and Lightning on the other, and it's actually got a little loop that you can put on your keychain or not. I keep it in my travel bag. It's tiny, you know, but it's a Lightning cable if and when you ever need a Lightning cable, and it works. So huge thing to have. It's $29 from, like I said, from hellonomad.com, or you can get it on Amazon as well. So that's called the Charge Key. And there it is. That's where we have it. What else do we have here, John? I'm looking at the time. Okay. Scott, you know what? Scott, take it away. I think.
Hey, John and Dave, Dave and John, my two favorite Mac geeks. Listen, this is Scott in DC. I have a cool stuff found item that you may have talked about before, but I have been using the heck out of that I thought I would share. There is a product out there called PhotoBulk. PhotoBulk, B-U-L-K, that lets you bulk do stuff to images, including adding, you know, certain watermarks to it. What this is good for, and what I have found it good for, is to create a standard image size and so on that is compatible with eBay. So those of you who list on eBay could drag and drop your images into PhotoBulk, add a little watermark on the bottom of your pictures so that, you know, if somebody sees your pictures, they're not going to steal them or whatever, and do your online selling that way. And also you can make sure that the photos match eBay's new size requirements. I have found it to be extremely, oh, and also does bulk rename as well of your various images. So when your camera renames everything, image IMG underscore and followed by some number, it will actually give some image names. Give you the option to name your images. This has been a very cool program, and I've been using the heck out of it lately since I've gotten into business for myself doing collectibles and antiques. Another cool stuff found is already on your Mac, and it's called Automator. Automator, I have found that when you have items that only take up a small part of your screen, of your image, can let you manipulate the image. One of the things that I found is it has two preview plugins. One is to crop the image by a certain size, but what happens when it crops it, it tends to make the image smaller. Well, what you do with Automator is you expand the image 150% and crop it to about the size that you want. And it takes a little playing around with it. And between Photo Bulk and Automator, it has made getting those pictures together to list on eBay absolutely wonderful to deal with. So I just thought I would pass that along because, hey, that's what I do. I'm in the mood. And you guys are nice enough to listen to me at times, even when I do rant. Anyway, this is Scott, Washington, D.C., your nation's capital. Happen to be standing in a government building at the moment, but, you know, don't tell the government that. Signing off. I don't know. Don't get caught, I guess.
Hopefully you don't get caught, Scott. We love listening to your rants. We don't always share Scott's rants on the show because they go on too long. That wasn't a rant. That was, he has some great stuff. Scott's I consider him among our top, probably top three Unix guru listeners that we have. He's just done so much of that stuff.
He goes into excruciating and in this case, it's a good
thing.
But yes, I would, yes. Scott impresses me with his, I think he's got a couple of years on us, but, he's lived his life. I think in the, mostly in the Unix world, we share common experiences, but yeah, no,
it's great.
We always love,
but
sometimes it's a bit verbose for the podcast. So
the show is better for having Scott as a listener. There are a lot of things that we've imparted to you over the years, that have come from Scott. Now, like I said, there's a couple of you that are really helpful on the Unix front. MLV in the chat room today is another one.
We take it, we condense it. And,
that's right. All right. You want to tell us about Michelle, John? You learned a cool stuff found this one, right?
Yeah. From this unexpected source. the basic question here. So from Michelle, who is an admitted random NAS question generator, NAS being network attached storage. Another random NAS question regarding sensitive data stored on the Synology. Currently, I have my data on the iMac. It's using File Vault. Since no one has access to the iMac, except when their hands are on the keyboard, I feel pretty safe. But what about keeping sensitive information on the Synology? Or do you just not do it? If you do you lose anything in the process? Shorten file names, naming conventions, indexing, file search? That's the question.
It's a good question.
Yeah. Well, I think the answer is, wow, you know, there's a smart guy out there. So I had a few solutions, but then the smart guy out there, this Dave Hamilton guy, knew about something I did not. So to me, that's a cool stuff found. And this Dave Hamilton guy points out Synology and some others allow you to create an encrypted shared folder into which you can put your sensitive data. And we will link to the tutorial on how to do this. I think that's really the question. So at first, I did not think there was a way to create without using third-party tools, some of the ones to me, encrypted disk image file, TrueCrypt, which has actually had some weird things happening in their world lately.
And they're done. I'm glad you brought up TrueCrypt. If you're using
that happen because somebody thought they got hacked. All of a sudden, TrueCrypt on their website, our solution is bogus and don't use it and use something. And I'm like, huh? Somebody thinks I think it's an ongoing story unless you know otherwise, but it's like, huh?
I see a story from PC World 4 hours ago. So noon Eastern on Friday the 30th that TrueCrypt is gone. But again, like you said, this is developing. Yeah.
Cause I believe I've used it and it worked as far as I could tell as advertised. And I believe our friend Pilot Pete has used TrueCrypt on occasion.
He did up until he got, until File Vault 2 is way better because it's built into the OS. So you aren't going to, you know, foobar it by upgrading to, you know, 10.9.5 or whatever, you know? Yeah. So,
right. And I reviewed it a while ago and it's a nice cross platform solution for, you know, encrypted volumes. But apparently, something weird happened where some people are still scratching their head saying, it just seems too weird that somebody that offers a secure multi-platform storage solution all of a sudden says our solution is bogus and don't use us anymore. Bye. It's like, huh?
Yeah, I know. It's a bizarre story. I agree.
All right. But so back to the point here, Dave, you have information as to a solution that we can use on the Synology. So we'll link to that and people can check it out and you can securely store your contents on your Synology.
I have something that that you will hear for the last hour, you have heard the results of, assuming my, and it's not really a test because I've tested it already, but assuming our first production run with Mac Geek Gab is successful. A service called Auphonic, AUPHONIC. I mentioned in the last show that somebody needed to do some sound processing. And I mentioned Levelator, which is an old utility, but still usable. And we use it for Mac Geek Gab to do some advanced kind of all-in-one black box audio processing. Listener Andy here from Durham, New Hampshire, wrote in. Or called in, I don't know, whatever he did. He told me about this service called Auphonic, which is, I'm still trying to scratch my head over how they are going to make money because I want them to stay in business. They are an all-in-one service. I will, at the end of this show, so shortly here, I will take the AIFF file. We record to 16-bit AIFF so that it's completely uncompressed. We have raw audio. I record a mono file. I will upload this file to them. Now that will take a little bit of time because it's like 400 megs or something. And we'll send this file to them and then they will run it through something that is effectively does the same thing and perhaps a little bit more than Levelator. Then it will add all of our tags, the image for the show, the title, the track number, you know, it'll say it's by John and I, it'll, you know, say it's Mac Geek Gab, all that stuff, all the meta tags. And then it will convert two versions, one for MP3 that then it FTPs up to the server that it needs to go to. And one for AAC that we put in Dropbox for Michael, it will put it in Dropbox. It'll do all of this in this web service. And they have a desktop app that would do some of this, but I don't think it'll do all the automation stuff, but it'll do the conversion. And the desktop app, I think, is $79 if you use it non-commercially and $400 if you use it commercially. But it seems like the web service actually does more because it does all of this automation and workflow stuff. And the cool thing is I've set up a workflow. So all I have to do is say, I've got this preset, boom, put it in, maybe change the track number because, you know, the episode number is the track number. So we'll type in 504 and then that's that. So I'm really stoked about this Auphonic thing. I'll put a link in the show notes, but I got to find out more about it because I'm kind of wondering what's the catch? I gotta figure it out, but hopefully the results of it are, we've been using it all week for the Mac Observer's Daily Observations, the new podcast that we're doing for the same reason, because we finished the show. Jeff can pump it up to Auphonic and then boom, it's just there, done. So it's been working all week. I have all the faith in the world that it's going to work today for Matt Geek Gab, but I want to know that it's going to work 6 months from now for Matt Geek Gab. So I'm going to reach out to them and find out a little bit more, John. But it totally takes over. I had an automator action that I had written to do all of this crazy stuff and iTunes and FTP with transmit and all that stuff. And this basically replaces all of it. I still have the automator action because I want to send out a couple of emails when the show is live. And I'd like the automator action to just build those. But basically the action now is it tells me here's the web page. It opens it up. It says, dum-dum, upload the file. When you've finished up, while it's uploading, click next, and then I'll create your emails for you. And that's all my automator action does anymore. So, you know, MLV actually in the chat room says, for a while there, I thought it was going to replace Michael Johnson's tasks. No, but you can put in chapters with images and links, and it will add those too. So, you know, Michael might be able to use it. I don't know. Michael does it in GarageBand and has a workflow that works for him. But you could do that, especially with a simple show like our daily observation show. I've mentioned it twice. You really should listen. It's an awesome show. 20 minutes or 15 to 20 minutes each day. Quick reflections on what's going on in the Apple world, and you're off to go. But for that one, you know, there's two topics or something. We could do an AAC version and enhance it and chapterize it. And very easily, Jeff would just mark it down while he's recording and he's good to go. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So I don't know. I don't know what the catch is, John. It's good. TMO Daily Observations got featured in the new and noteworthy over there at iTunes, which is exciting.
Woo-hoo.
I know. I like it.
It's good. Stop in.
It's good. Have you listened? You haven't listened yet?
No.
Oh.
I told you, I listen to very few podcasts.
This one's easy and short, though. It's bite size.
That's a plus.
It's actually becoming my new favorite podcast to listen to because it just lets me catch up on things, you know? So anyway,
Verso, is she a usual, frequent she's attendee?
Yeah, absolutely.
Regular?
Not every day. No one is a regular. It's Jeff's show. And so he pulls in whoever it makes sense to pull in based on the stories that people are interested in talking about. Yeah.
All right. So Jeff is the moderator.
Correct. He's the host. Okay. You got it. Yep.
All right. So I'd imagine that means you got to show up without pants.
Sadly, yes, that's right.
Because that's how Jeff rolls.
It is how Jeff rolls.
But if it's audio only, it's really not an issue.
Not. you know, I want to circle back to that TrueCrypt thing, John, because, and if you would read Bruce's thing, which I had at the end of our agenda for today. It's not quite cool stuff found, but it's sort of related very tangentially to TrueCrypt. But it answers a question that we had in a recent show or something that I proposed. I said that there is no way to zero out an SSD drive. And Bruce may have found a way to zero out most of an SSD drive. And so,
well, it's not zeroing, but it's accomplishing the same goal.
Probably. Again, you got to deal with the cells that are in the overflow cells. And I'm not sure that this method does, but go ahead and tell them the method before we debate this.
Well, I think the method is to use any form of full drive encryption, and I believe Bruce suggested, dude, use FileVault or FileVault 2.
Right, FileVault 2.
More proper.
That's right. Yep.
Though it could include something, maybe not anymore, if they claim it's not secure, but any full drive encryption software, effectively, unless you know the key, so that's the Achilles heel, if you will. But if you have a drive that's encrypted, it's as good as zeroing it out. Not quite as good, okay? Some security purists would argue, no, it's not, because if I get your key...
Right, that's true. Yeah, but sure.
To me, with what I know about the current crypto, highly, highly, incredibly unlikely.
Right. So, it's interesting. It's probably the best way we have, despite its minor... imperfections. It's few imperfections, but it's probably the best we've got.
I got it on the MacBook. I don't have it on the Mini. I don't know why yet, but on the MacBook Pro, I mean, the only inconvenience is that when you start the machine, You may have to enter a password.
Sure.
Other than that, it's flawed. I don't even notice it's there, and that's how it should be.
That's exactly right. That's how it should be. You know, we had a kind of a sidebar conversation happening at Mac Tech at the boot camp thing that I spoke at in Boston, wherever it was. And Ed and I there, Ed, who's the editor of all of the Mac Tech magazine, you know, we're talking about it. He had done some, and I can't, his last name is on the tip of my tongue. It begins with an M. Ed Markham. Ah, God, why can't I think of it? Anyway, he said that he had done some testing because somebody said, well, you know, in theory, encryption, whole disk encryption, File Vault 2 specifically, is going to naturally, it's got to slow down your Mac at some point. Now, if you've got a Mac with a chip, and all the new ones do, where the chip has, you know, 256-bit AES hardware.
Even that, it's symmetric encryption.
Yeah, but here's the it was like, okay, yeah, it's going to be there, but it's going to be so negligible that it's irrelevant. And Ed said that he was able to consistently reproduce results where reading and writing files with whole disk encryption happen faster than a non-encrypted drive with all the same parameters. And so we talked about it a little bit. And the only thing that makes sense, he said it was not very noticeable. I mean, you would only notice it if you were doing benchmarks. But he said it was consistent 100% of the time. And so maybe there's some caching happening, right, where the write operation, especially, but even the read operation, you know, it's going to go ahead and read a block of data and decrypt it and to present it to you. And maybe that makes it more efficient. It's an interesting thing to think about.
Well, or the code's been optimized. Some portion of the code's been optimized to.
Well, it has to be to do the encryption and decryption. So, yeah, so maybe it's actually doing something a little better. I, like you, John, I certainly noticed no negative effects from running whole disk encryption on my Air. And I would recommend it for anybody that has a laptop, especially if you've got an SSD in it, because you're really not going to notice anything. But John, you're not even noticing it on a hybrid drive, right? Which is good.
Right. Because, to me, the biggest risk factor is if you got a machine that somebody can pick up and run away with, that's the machine that should have full disk.
But agreed.
You know, if you're in a bad neighborhood.
Well,
like, honestly, the Mac Mini, I mean, I'm not too worried about somebody breaking into my house and taking all my computer stuff.
Right.
My strategy is, because it's so old, they look at it and say, why would I steal that? No, I'm just kidding. But still, I feel, yeah, something that is in my house, I don't feel as much of a need to encrypt it, but yeah, can't hurt. I should probably, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that this weekend. I'm going to turn on File Vault.
All right. So I will pause. I will think about one thing before you choose to enable whole disk encryption on your desktop machine.
Okay.
When I travel, sometimes I will log into my Mac from remote and perform some operation or something. If I have to reboot that Mac, can I enter that password from remote to get it past that File Vault thing? I haven't tested it. I honestly don't know the answer to this question, but if I can't, then that would be reason enough for me not to enable it on a machine. But it may well be that from remote I can. I just haven't tested it. So I don't know. I throw it out there. I want to thank Michael Johnston. I know we talked about him, but I didn't get the opportunity yet to thank him, John. Michael Johnston, he converts the show to AAC for all of you. If you want to write us, hang on. I'm going out of order here. If you want, but as far as Michael goes, check out his site, getappler.com, GETAPPLR.com. Perfectly ripe for a Yahoo takeover because, you know, Flickr and what was the other one that they bought with the drop the vowel before the R? He's perfect. So check it out before you, and then you can say you were a member when. So check that out. Also, his We Have Communicators podcast has changed its name. It is now the iOS Show, which I think is a better name. It's certainly a more descriptive
name.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So I'm stoked about that. So check it out. Check out the iOS Show with Michael Johnston. And he's usually got Jeff Gamet and Adam Christensen on with him. So check that out. John, I said feedback at MacGeekGab.com is the way to email us.
You did, Dave, but it's getting over an hour here, and I'm kind of concerned about if you're keeping it together here. So I'm going to remind you that it's feedback@MacGeekGab.com.
That it is, or premium@MacGeekGab.com. As we explained in the last show, we'll spare you the full premium description, short of saying thank you very much for all of you that contribute, and welcome to all the new premium subscribers that we have in the last week too. So thank you so much. Your support of us and of our sponsors and all that, it's humbling and inspiring. And so we keep doing what we do for you. 206-666-GEEK is the address or is the phone number to send things, to call and leave messages. What's going on with me, John? I can't even talk anymore. What's geek?
I'm telling you, man. You thought I'd lose it. I think you're losing it. But geek is, at least in this country and in this symbology, is 4-3-3-5.
It is. It is. And you can type that in on your iPhone and it'll work. If you
know what else people got to do, Dave?
What's that?
And this helps all of us. So we've built a wonderful community here. And seriously, I could have never envisioned this. You share with us, we share with you. But how do you let other people know about this? Well, probably one of the major venues that people find out about podcasts in general is iTunes. And how can you let people know about your favorite podcasts? Because you're our favorite listeners. And if we're your favorite podcast, or even if not, but we would certainly hope so if you're listening, leave us an iTunes comment. It certainly helps. It gives the podcast exposure and it lets people know, and it helps us, if you got something constructive to improve our game. But I think we've refined this pretty well over nearly
a decade. Will keep refining it. I come in with beginner's mind every time. That's how we do it.
Really?
Yeah, I do. Okay. Yeah. Cashfly, cachefly.com is the place that provides all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. And then, of course, there's our podcast marketplace, which includes Barebones Software at barebones.com, Smile Software at smile.com, Smile at smilesoftware.com, Gazelle at gazelle.com to sell all your stuff back, squarespace.com/MGG with coupon code MGG, Rage Software with coupon code MGG, as we mentioned, iFixit with coupon code MGG. Have a splendid week. I don't think we're going to run a podcast while I'm at WWDC, but you never know what's going to happen with us here, John. So we will podcast certainly when I'm back a week from Sunday. But until then, John, share some advice with me, with them, with all of us.
Well, I just looked in the chat room and I see this one guy, and Pilot Pete failed because he got caught.